My guest today, Harvey Smith, is project advisor to the Living New Deal and board president of the National New Deal Preservation Association. He was co-curator of the 2010 exhibit, The American Scene, New Deal Art, 1935-1943, at the Bedford Gallery in Walnut Creek, and curated the exhibit, Art and Activism, The New Deal's Legacy Around the Bay, at the Knesset Gallery in San Francisco in 2011. He received a BA in English and Master of Public Health degrees from UC Berkeley, and has worked as an educator, public health worker and researcher, radio journalist, horse rancher, and union carpenter. Most recently, he has been active in the Berkeley community's efforts to preserve historic post office on Alston Way. Welcome to Takes on the World, Harvey Smith. Welcome, Harvey Smith, to Takes on the World.
Hello. Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad to have you with us. What began as a local issue in Ukiah 3 years ago, when the town's residents learned that their beloved 75-year-old post office with its historic New Deal mural was about to be closed and sold, seems to have been replicated across the country as part of a major privatization scandal that has been staged under the media radar until, for me at least, UPS and its partner in crime, C.B. Richard Ellis, attempted to close and sell off the Berkeley post office, another historic building in the heart of downtown Berkeley. What happened then?
For us, this started a year and a half ago, and, we had heard about Ukiah, we had heard about, you know, other places where post offices were going to be sold, and then when we heard rumors of Berkeley, it got very serious. So Gray Brecken and I, Gray is also with the Living New Deal, our initial concern was the fact that, you know, many of these post offices are among the 1,100 that were built during the New Deal, and most of them have New Deal art, whether they were built in the 30s or early 40s or before. So immediately, you know, we became concerned. We organized a local meeting, and now a year and a half later, we're really up to our eyeballs in all this. It started with just our city, but soon we realized that it was much bigger. You know, we really had to link up with other cities. We had to really delve into what was going on with the post office. You know, this institution that is named in the Constitution. Postmaster General used to be a cabinet level position. That, you know, it has a long history. So how did we get to this point? So we've done a lot of work on looking at all aspects of the issue.
What was really interesting is the involvement of C.B. Richard Ellis, which Dianne Feinstein, significant other Richard Bloom, his Bloom Capital, is a major stockholder and happens to be the world's largest real estate agent, getting an exclusive contract with the U.S. Postal Service to sell off its buildings. This seems to be an unusual situation in terms of what the post office has done.
Yeah, it is unusual, and we've been making a lot of noise about it. At first, the media just kind of wanted to avoid it, particularly locally, because, you know, there are a lot of ties established between both the senator and her husband locally. The Chronicle wouldn't touch it until really very recently, until after the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the L.A. Times had covered the story. So finally, it's been daylighted, and then there was an excellent investigative piece by Peter Byrne. It's called Going Postal. You can easily find it online. And he did an in-depth investigation, and what he discovered was that there were just many, many issues raised by this contract with the Postal Service and CBRE. And so what he discovered is that there was, first of all, you have to say, you know, why, you know, this is a senator's husband is involved in this. But then beyond that, what was discovered was that many post offices were being sold below even assessed value. You know, a few of them, you know, were sold at a market rate or above, but many of them were sold below their value and sold to corporations that were affiliated with CBRE, either directly or indirectly. So the whole thing looks very, very suspicious. You know, the whole issue as a whole, Gray Brecken's characterized it as the new Teapot Dome scandal of our century.
And, well, the scandal really began in 2006 when Congress obviously determined to privatize whatever it could, made the post office, and it appears with the post office cooperation, at least the heads of the post office, required it to have 75 years in advance of retirees' benefits.
Right.
It's an impossibility, and there was no logic behind this, and it would seem that there was no attempt to mobilize by the post office or the AFL-CIO or anyone about this at the time, and now it's like a fait accompli, and yet it has to be one of the major scandals of our time.
Yeah, you know, the Republicans and the you know, conservative think tanks have been very open about what they're doing, particularly lately. You know, the think tanks all have position papers on privatizing the U.S. Postal Service. And little known, but last year during the election, there was actually a plank in the Republican platform that called for privatizing the Postal Service. So they've been quite clear about what they're doing. But it's flown under the radar. And even though the Postal Service got that onerous requirement, they were actually able to meet it for about 6 years. So the post office is actually doing pretty well, with the exception of that requirement. But beyond that, they've even overpaid into their pension fund. So there's actually a lot of money. You know, if Congress would undo that requirement, refund some of the pension fund overpayment, the post office would be doing just fine. But we should probably also mention the genesis of this whole thing, because I mentioned earlier that Postmaster General was a cabinet member. And what happened was that in 1970, there was a postal strike because postal workers at that time were underpaid and working conditions were not the best. They were able to get a union and to represent them and turn some of those conditions in that way situation around. But in 1971, this new entity was formed. This was under the Nixon administration. And the U.S. Postal Service's budget became independent of the federal budget, so it had to be self-sustaining, and it was no longer a cabinet-level position. It was made into a kind of public-private corporation, so it's neither quite one or the other. Then you jump ahead to that 2006, a very deliberate attempt to break the budget of the post office.
Well, it seems that that vote taken under Nixon to make the post office department this quasi-public agency, but actually separate from the government, was a first step in a plan to then do what happened again in 2006, that they couldn't actually go to the public right now and take what's considered to be an inherent public service. No one questioned about it. People grew up with the post being representing the government, to actually eliminate, to kind of damage the image of that in the eyes of the public, to set it up for what's happened since. Has there been any kickback in Congress? I take it that 2006 vote was taken before the Democrats got into office in November 2006. But are you aware of any efforts to go back? Or is that a done deal?
Oh, no, there are efforts, but the problem is that we have this incredible dysfunction in Congress, and the congressperson that's leading the charge on privatization is Daryl Issa from Southern California. You know,
yes.
Very, very, you know, I think touted as the wealthiest member of Congress, and so the bills that that would actually fix the situation get bottled up in his committee, and then the really awful ones that would do further damage to the post office get out of his committee. So unfortunately, until we have a change in Congress and a more sane legislative process, you know, we can't really see any relief. So what we've done is, first of all, try to do what we can locally for our post office, and then we're working with other post offices, primarily Stamford, Connecticut, the Bronx, New York, and La Jolla, California, to fight this legally. And so we've made some headway with that. It's sort of a David and Goliath struggle, but one of our spinoff organizations is the National Post Office Collaborate, and they've been leading the fight on the legal front. So we're making headway there. Because of all the dust we've stirred up, the Office of the Inspector General is actually doing some audits of various aspects of this issue, and we expect to see some results of that in this coming March. Already, they just issued this week the suggestion that the post office reactivate postal banking to help ends meet, which is what it used to do and which is very present. And if you go to, you know, Italy today or France today, they have very thriving postal banks, as do many other countries.
Yeah, I experienced postal banking in France when I had to get a check written, and it was written on the postal bank. And I, at that time, I wasn't even aware such a thing existed. Perhaps you could explain a little bit more how that would work.
Well, the way it used to work was, you know, given, I guess, the fact that there was a time when it was maybe harder for people to get bank accounts, or maybe there were the issue of banks not being really trusted, the Postal Service used to offer banking services. And as you noticed in France, it's like any bank. You go to the ATM, you can withdraw money, you can deposit money, you can have your banking services done there, through the postal system. So it's an alternative form of banking that cuts out those that are said to be too big to fail, and so it's an alternative that people like because they can avoid the big banks. But of course, in our situation here, that's who you'd be going up against if you wanted to establish postal banking again. But you asked about legislation. So the two bills that, if people really want to look at, two bills that propose some positive steps, they are H.R. 630 and S.B. 316, companion bills, and those really propose changes that would put the Postal Service on solid footing.
And who has introduced those?
I don't have that in front of me, but
they have been introduced in this session of Congress.
Yeah, they've been introduced. But again, the issue is it's sort of a template of what could happen, but you get back to the dysfunction. So these bills aren't moving very quickly, but the fact is they have lots of co-sponsors.
One thing I mentioned earlier, that the Berkeley Post Office has been kept off the auction block by the action of your member of Congress, Barbara Lee,
yes,
who had a reprieve added to a rider, I think it's a defense bill. Perhaps you could explain.
No, it was the appropriation bill that we've all heard about. This compromise, they finally developed an appropriations bill, which is hundreds of pages long. But what Congress will do was attach reports to this. So she was able, through her committee, to attach a report that advises the Postal Service to establish a moratorium on any sales of post offices until the Inspector General reports come out. And what they're looking at is, all the irregularities that we've come across either here in Berkeley or in other parts of the country. So the Postal Service, since this was sort of under the radar for a while, the Postal Service just, figured they could do anything they wanted. So there were provisions around public hearings, and they paid fast and loose with that. Procedures around, if you relocate, close or sell a post office, there are certain procedures. They didn't quite follow those. There are environmental procedures. There are regulations on historic preservation. And that's where they're being challenged, as well as on this arrangement with CBRE and the real estate dealings.
How many of these post offices are you aware of were built during the New Deal that have the murals?
Well, quite a few of the ones that are on the auction block. And, there were, as I mentioned, 1,100 New Deal post offices built. But the way they seem to target this is, it's based on real estate. And we've heard that CBRE is actually picking the post offices rather than the postal system figuring out which ones in terms of their operations would be, perhaps should be closed. It's CBRE that's picking them. And they're targeting communities where there is real estate value. But operationally, it doesn't make sense. First of all, we've got this artificial budget crisis. So if that wasn't there, there would be no need to sell the post offices. And then in terms of function, what we've seen here locally, and certainly the people in the Ukiah have seen it. I've been there. Their fenced downtown post office sits in the middle of downtown, very conveniently located, and now you have to really drive where people perhaps used to just walk to the post office. Now it forces people to drive. So those that don't have transportation or have difficulty walking or navigating, it's a long way to that post office that is on the edge of town. So here in Berkeley, we have a central post office. It serves city government. It serves the university. It serves our downtown businesses. And that's where it should be. But now services are being located to a corner of Berkeley, making it inconvenient for people that use the post office, as well as creating additional pollution because people are having to drive further distances. And it's the same thing for the mail carriers, where they used to be located in the central post office. Now they're in a corner of Berkeley.
My guess is Harvey Smith. We're talking about post offices closing and the scandal that's led to their closing and being sold off by the government. I'll be opening the phones here about a quarter of the hour. If you have some questions, think about them now. One thing is the idea of the commons, the community centers, are really almost consciously be under attack. I went and looked at the post office site last night, and there is a San Rafael post office on D Street, where I lived in San Rafael for a number of years, and I was actually there when that post office opened. And it is being sold. It's on the block there. It's walking distance from convenient to downtown. And the post office that they probably keep is not at all convenient. You can't walk to it at all. The end of town just before the Richmond Bay Bridge. And if you're driving across the bridge, you're driving, it's one thing. But for people who want to walk and mail letters, buy some stamps, the post office is conveniently located, let's say, downtown San Rafael. I notice also there has been an effort for stores such as Staples and Walmart to sell stamps, to eliminate the people's need to go to the post office as a way of bringing business into those particular stores. And I understand there is some kind of Staples connection to C.B. Richard Ellis.
Yes, and we've discovered that, the interlocking boards or directors, that serve on both. Essentially this is about, jobs and services. It's about what, the services that we expect and if you were running a business, would you operate this way? What the postal—it seems like the Postal Service is deliberately, discouraging people from its sites and trying to make it a self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, I had to wait so long at the post office, or I had to go so far, And so it's part of the scheme that is being put forward by the Republicans of reducing government and getting rid of, good jobs. The president last night spoke about inequality. Well, you've got a workforce at the post office that does have good jobs, and this is only going to be increase the spiral of austerity that we're living through. It's going to mean more people that have less livable jobs, and so driving you know, the business over to Staples only means that you're going to have people that are working there at very low wages. Staples workers are quite concerned about their situation. So also we have to look at the fact that, you know, government employees, there's a certain amount of security in terms of the handling of the mail through government employees. There are postal inspectors that make sure that the mail gets handled well. That doesn't happen at Staples. So there's a big issue of the jobs. And traditionally, the post office has been a place that hires lots of veterans. It hires lots of African Americans, lots of Latinos, lots of women. And so this is not the time when we want to take those jobs away. It's just going to be add to the further, you know, downward spiral of our economy.
Well, there is this effort to get everything done through electronic gizmos in your personal wallet, your personal smartphone, so to speak. But obviously, the competitors with the post office for packaging, FedEx and United Parcel, are not about to take over daily mail service. So it seems like they're coming up with all kinds of excuses. They want every business wants people to do business online rather than have bills sent through the mail, and they present this as a way to be, you know, sustain the environment because we're eliminating the use of paper. But I always sense that there is a difference. Goal in mind. It's like the self-service counters in supermarkets. They want to eliminate as many cashiers and paid employees as they can.
Well, still given that, it doesn't exactly apply to the post office. So, you know, the Republicans always come up with these talking points, you know, and they'll push them and repeat them and repeat them and repeat them. So one of the talking points has been, well, the post office is broke. Well, no, that's artificial. That was created in Congress, can be undone in Congress. The other one is that, well, you know, people don't use the post office anymore. You know, it's all happens on the Internet. Well, for first-class mail, that's true. There's less. But because of the Internet, package mail has increased. So it's kind of balanced out. And what we see, though, is that since UPS, FedEx, Pitney Bowes, all these big corporations involved in mail services, they want some of the billions of dollars of profit that they're looking at with the post office. They've been lobbying very hard for the privatization to take place because they will benefit directly. But look what happened over the holidays. It was, you know, all over the media. UPS and FedEx didn't meet their delivery deadlines. Packages were late. And so what can we expect, you know, if there's further privatization of the post office? Less service at a much higher cost than what we're getting presently. And they don't really want to see the post office eliminated totally. They just want the most profitable parts of it. So I think the post office would be around. But, you know, think of the scenario where, you know, now it's universal service for, you know, now 49 cents. You can send a letter, you know, or a package from Key West, Florida, all the way to the hinterlands of Alaska. So UPS and FedEx are happy to take that package or letter, you know, from Key West to, say, Anchorage. But beyond that, when the route gets more expensive, that's where the USPS would come in. So this is just about trying to cream off the good business and, you know, have the post office take on the stuff that's less profitable.
And we do have a caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a different wrinkle on the post office. I've heard that the NSA photographed 160 billion, that's with a B, billion pieces of mail last year. And the program was called the Mail Isolation Control and Tracking Program. And I wondered if the NSA is reimbursing the post office. Well, let me give you an example. It used to be you could mail a letter from Philo to Boonville, and there was a local mail thing, and they'd drop it off, got there the same day. Now they send from Philo to Boonville, it's got to go to Oakland to be photographed. Then it goes back to Boonville, and I'd like to hear some comment on that.
Are you, you know,
We haven't really been following that aspect of it. You know, we know that the surveillance state is, you know, growing daily. You know, the fact is, I don't know how they do it, you know, if they actually photograph the inside of the letter, the outside of the letter. Although, you could think that, sending things through the mail are perhaps a bit more secure than online, where there's, you know, virtually no security. We know that. Or in our cell phone conversations, virtually no security.
But it's
absolutely an issue, and I doubt they're reimbursing, because I don't think the NSA reimburses Verizon or AT&T for cell phone, you know, calls that they monitor either.
But the post office must cost more freight to go. They're going 5 miles to go 130 miles one way out of the way, mail to get there, and the post office has got to pick that slack up. I bet the NSA doesn't reimburse them.
Go on.
No, I'm just saying it's hard to follow the logic of the post office when they close one site, open another, they change around distribution centers. Just looking here locally at Berkeley or looking at Ukiah, what is the sense of taking a centrally located post office and moving it to a periphery of a city? There's no sense in it. People have come up with other solutions for the post office too. I mean, go solar. You know, they have one of the world's, if not the world's largest, motorized fleet. You know, if they could go solar, they'd be saving money. They could go solar in terms of their facilities. We've got a roof on the Berkeley post office. They could be generating electricity up there. There's lots of things the post office could do, but a lot of what they're doing now does not make any sense. Service-wise, you know, financially, in any way you look at it.
Well, they could have, in Ukiah, for example, the annex, which became the post office today, was open, but they had to spend a considerable amount of money to make it into a usable post office and not just a service center. That money could have been used to do whatever they needed to do to fix up the downtown post office. But there was that certain logic where you're a business, you want to be where the people are. You don't want to move away from where the people are. But it seems that's what the post office has been doing. And this is why I suspect from the beginning there's been collusion, self-dealing, whatever, at the top levels of the U.S. Postal Service with C.B. Richard Ellis. This is why they picked one exclusive real estate sales group and the world's largest to do the job.
Yeah, well, I can tell you this, that when 2006, the Postmaster General was Potter, and he's a registered Republican, and he worked under the Bush administration. His assistant is Postmaster General Donahoe, the present postmaster. When you look at the situation, you just have to wonder, you know, is he really looking after the best interest of the post office? We can only conclude no when we see, you know, what's been happening. I think it is a very conscious effort to undo the post office, and I don't have the smoking gun to say that Donahoe is working hand in glove with these people, but it certainly appears that way.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you so much for covering this topic. I was one of the main people that organized, got all the signatures here in Ukiah. And I must say, over the course of the months we were working on that, it just really did seem clear to me that they were going to follow what was the letter of the law, but with no intention of actually having any response in terms of what we actually did. And to me, it just seems that it's, you know, trying to kill civic discourse and engagement and to starve another branch of the government of money to be able to do their job, so that then the Republicans can say, see, the government can't do this. You have to privatize everything, so that then there is no competition, which they say they love so much, and they can charge everyone twice as much for things, like has, you know, happened a lot with the military and they're trying to do with the schools and that sort of thing. I must say the people that came to when we presented our reasons for wanting to keep it open, we talked about the historic reasons, the social reasons, et cetera, et cetera. There actually were some of the people, you know, that listened and despite themselves, actually looked moved at the hundreds of people that showed up, the hours of testimony, the passion with which it was delivered. But in the end, it was clear that all of it was going to be, you know, it was like a show, you know, a show trial for them or something. You know, they can say, okay, we went through the motions, get on with it. And it's, I know Congress is the one that enacted the law in terms of the ridiculous amount of into the future of needing for the retirement money. Is that something that Obama could do, enact to change that if they refuse to do it? And that's one of my questions. And let's see. One of the reasons that they said they needed to move the post office here was to save money on trucking for this, so their trucks wouldn't have to go through town. You know, our feeling is there's not that many trucks a day versus how many people use the post office and are having to trek across the town the other direction. It really didn't add up. And they are, and they do send everything down to Oakland. And my understanding is they do photograph all the outsides, and that's how, when the Rizon things have happened, that's how they've been able to track things, because they have a picture of everything that's being mailed. Anyway, saying, you know, well, the reason they say they have to send it down there has to do with centralizing and saving on costs, even though it makes no sense. Anyway, thank you so much. I'm going to listen to the rest, and thank you for covering this. I think it's a really, really important issue. thank you so much.
Harvey?
Well, you know, what happened in Ukiah, and I've looked at communities all over the country, and what happened there, what you described there, you're going through the motions but not really paying attention, is universal. And the sentiments that people expressed in Ukiah were almost the same as here in Berkeley, the same in the Bronx, same in Stanford, La Jolla, you name it. And so what we see is a real disregard for the community, although supposedly they're supposed to be listening. So there's a definite pattern there. You know, if you take a step back at this, if you look at the history of the post office and our civic buildings and civic services, there was a time when it was felt that we deserved, as a public, beautiful buildings to do our business in. You know, whether it would be a city hall, you know, a courthouse, a school, or a post office. And essentially the message now is we as a public just aren't worthy, you know. We're not worthy of the beautiful building as a gathering place and as part of the commons, and we're not worthy of the convenient services. So it's, you know, exactly what we're seeing all over the country, this response and people realizing that they want more, not less, from the post office. In terms of President Obama, I think the executive branch has been pretty much absent on this. I doubt that he could overturn, something that's been passed in Congress. That would have to happen there. But it would be wonderful for him to step up on the issue. It'd be wonderful for the Democrats, you know, because the Republicans have sort of drawn the line in the sand and said, privatize the USPS. So it's time for the Democrats, I think, to step up. This is really a populist issue. It goes to the core of the issue of inequality and many other issues.
Amen. We have another caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. Just wanted to point out, you know, to contribute to this discussion, that I live in Elk, and just a couple of weeks ago we had our annual town meeting, and the postmaster, you know, got up in front of the meeting, as she does every year, and pointed out again, in a desperate plea to all of us, that we should use the Elk Post Office, because, you know, they've set all these thresholds for use that, so that, you know, the more business that they keep an eye every year on how much business is being conducted at the post office, and there's this constant threat hanging over the post office. If it doesn't reach a certain threshold, it's in danger of being shut down. And this isn't just once, you know, a one-time deal. It's like they're spending all these resources to monitor the income of the local outlying post office. And every year, It's in threat of being shut down, and you know, so we are being exhorted to you know, to use the services of the post office. So just two things. One is that all of us who live in these outlying areas should make as much use as possible of our local post offices. And also, I mean, this is just insane, you know, that they're spending all these resources to monitor our local post office's use. So I just wanted to point that out as a further way this draconian thing is going on. So
well thank you.
Okay, bye.
We're coming down to the end of a very enlightening interview, Harvey. But perhaps you could tell people what the Living New Deal is, because this is where you're coming from, where we're coming from in the moments remaining.
Yeah, well, I think probably the best thing to do would be give you some websites to go to, both for the Living New Deal and the post office. So the Living New Deal is a project that's mapping the physical legacy of the New Deal throughout the country. So there's a wonderful digital map. And it's a very collaborative project involving people from all over the country to contribute. So if you just search for Living New Deal, you'll find the website. There's another organization I also work with, the National New Deal Preservation Association. That website is New Deal Legacy. And then for the post office, the real go-to site is SaveThePostOffice.com, and that website was set up by an NYU professor, and it's really the site that the go-to site for all the essential information. We also have two websites, Save the BPO or Save the Berkeley Post Office for our local post office, and then the National Post Office Collaborate, which is working on the legal fight. And you can go there, and if you want to contribute to that cause, definitely go to the Collaborate post office, or a website, excuse me.
Harvey Smith, I want to thank you very much for bringing us up to date on what's happening with the post office, trying to save our post offices, and good luck with that Berkeley post office. I knew it well.
Thank you.
Thanks for being our guest, Dan Takes on the World.
Okay.